Well, thank you, Benny and Philippe. Let's adjust this microphone here a bit. Okay, I think I'm good. It's definitely a pleasure for me to be here at Pacific Rim tonight and to share a Chinese New Year dinner with you, although New Year was, I understand, a few weeks ago anyway. This is the year of the dog, so to all you dogs out there, congratulations. I'd like to say a few words about the club. Clubs for the Society of Actuaries are the lifeblood of our profession. They give us a sense of community. We get together. Pacific Rim Club in particular, this year is celebrating 25th anniversary. And I've found it a very vibrant club. I've spoken here before, as was mentioned, and I'm certainly happy to be here tonight. So what am I going to talk about tonight? Tonight I'm going to cover the SOA today, the strategic plan, and I'm also going to include some comments about international development in Asia and elsewhere. Before I get going, I do want to acknowledge two special SOA staff who are joining us tonight. So all the way from Chicago, we have Anne Henstrand, who is the Senior Director International. And all the way from Beijing, we have Jesse Lee. Jesse is our lead representative for China staff. And we also have Ben Marshall, the local SOA Canadian rep. I think Ben traveled the least to get here, I suppose. Right. All right, can we have the next slide? The one after that. Okay, let's turn to the SOA mission and values. It's up there, it's very brief. Our mission is that through education and research, the SOA advances actuaries as leaders in measuring and managing financial risk to improve financial outcomes for individuals, organizations, and the public. Our vision is where we'd like to be. We'd like actuaries to be highly sought after professionals who develop and communicate solutions to complex financial issues. Next slide, please. So, how do we get there? What is our plan? Last year, we adopted a strategic plan. It's a 5-year plan, and it has certain elements, as you can see up there. One element is education that anticipates changing expectations. And examples of that would be our initiatives in predictive analytics and new learning methods. We also have global services tailored by region and members gaining global perspectives. So we're starting to think about things like training people not just in US and Canadian regulatory matters, but also IFRS, Solvency II, and international capital standards. Our research is focused in deep programs on key issues. We don't do this alone. We also do this in coordination and cooperation with the CAS and the CIA. And one example of that tripartite cooperation is the climate index that we publish as a team. We also analyze, prioritize, and respond to the changing environment. By that we mean political, regulatory, and economic changes. We also look at sustainable and efficient resource models and decision processes. What do I mean by that? We have a mixture of paid staff in Chicago and elsewhere, and also volunteer. We want to make sure that we're operating efficiently in the best way possible. So we want to have roles and responsibilities that are clear, and we want authorities chart that identify who's responsible for making what decisions. And lastly, we look for effective and mutually beneficial relationships. And these are relationships that many organizations, we do this through regional annual meetings. We do this at NAC, what's called the North American Actuarial Council. We do this at international meetings at the IAA, International Actuarial Association. We also meet with our key stakeholders. We meet with top employers of actuaries twice a year. This is our Employers Council. We meet with candidates, Candidate Connect events, and with universities, our Centers of Actuarial Excellence. Next slide, please. Okay, you're not going to be able to read this chart, but it is on our website, and this is a chart of our strategic plan. It looks complicated, but what it's supposed to mean, what's intended, is it's a guide to decision making. It identifies key strategies and initiatives, and the ultimate goal of our strategy is as follows. We want to be relevant to employers and client needs. We want to serve a large and growing profession, and in turn provide meaningful work for current and future members. We want to be recognized and seen as credible with our stakeholders by clearly defining what we do, what value we add, and how we differ from other professionals. We want to expand the frontiers of the actual profession through ongoing strategic research. In other words, we need to make sure that we remain highly sought professionals and that stakeholders continue to seek out our members for their unique skills and high ethical standards. Next slide. Okay, so I don't know if you can all see this there, but this is a snapshot of our memberships, membership worldwide. And you can see that there's a lot of us in some countries and less in others. If you do the math, you'll notice that we have about 67% of our members, by members we mean ASAs or FSAs, in the US, 17% in Canada, and 16% rest of the world. So Canada, rest of the world are almost there, 17 versus 16%. Rest of the world in this context is primarily China, rest of Asia, and Latin America. China, we're present in mainland China, we're present in Hong Kong and Taiwan. In Asia, the top countries we're in is Thailand, Korea, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Singapore. And in Latin America, we're trying to make ties and explore countries like Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, and Chile. So next slide, please. What about our future members? This is a profile of our candidates and where they're located. And in other words, our future actuaries. Again, if you do the math, you'll find a slightly different mix. You'll find 64% is US, a little bit less, but still quite prominent. 13% Canada, used to be 17, it's going to be 13. And rest of the world, 23%. That's double Canada, or almost double Canada. So, that's kind of like the shape of things to come. We see good growth in Asia, as I mentioned. Latin America, we're making small baby steps. So far, we have 84 candidates. But, you start somewhere. Next slide. Okay. There were some changes that were made in the last few years in how we govern ourselves and how we operate. So, for example, the board of directors, which is elected by the SOA members, we have the SOA members being FSAs and five-year ASAs. The presidential leadership used to have a president-elect, current president, a past president, and an immediate past president. So when you're in that position, you're basically committed to 4 years. So one of the decisions they made is the penultimate past president disappears. So now you'll have three presidential officers instead of four. Elected board members go from 18 to 15. Research shows that a smaller board is more effective than one of these big boards. And the role of vice president was never very clear, so we're eliminating those. We used to have six vice presidents, and as the terms come up, expire, and election cycle goes, it'll slowly dwindle to zero vice presidents. Our leadership team consists of six members, the presidential officers, and the executive director, and some members at large. We also operate through board committees and operational committees. Next slide. Okay, I thought I'd put this up to illustrate the different involvement of Canadian representatives or members, US and rest of the world. And when you look down this chart, yes, this is the chart we have, or we want, you'll see that the mix doesn't change too much across the board until you get to the very bottom. What do you see at the very bottom? You see that on the education front and exam volunteers, Canada's way above its weight. It's 31% of all volunteers in education and exams reside in Canada. And by contrast, the opposite, the rest of the world, we only have 3% participation. So I thought that was revealing, and I thought I'd share that with you. Next slide. What about sections? Sections are special interest groups. Anybody can join, even if you're not an actuary, I understand. You can also join a section if you pay the fees. And the top three sections are retirement, education, research, and investments. And the lowest participation sections from a Canadian perspective are health, long-term care, and taxation. I was told that I should, this is a good time to make a commercial. If you're a member of a section, if you're not a member of a section, go ahead and join one. And if you're a member of a section, consider joining another one. It's good for you. It's, it provides you technical expertise, networking opportunity, and much, much more. Okay, end of commercial. Next slide. All right. Another thing that recently happened in the past few months is the CIA and SOA signed what's called a Memorandum of Understanding. What does this do? It says that the CIA and SOA will collaborate and cooperate on education. We now have CIA representatives on the curriculum and exam committees for the components recognized by the CIA. We co-brand exams together, and we plan to work together on future needs. Next month, we're getting together for a big annual once-a-year meeting. And you say, well, gee, why is this even necessary? Well, it's a funny thing. The Canadian Institute of Actuaries have been around for 50 years, and we've always used SOA exams as part of our credentialing, but there was never anything in writing. And so this Memorandum of Understanding actually formalizes it and provides a method for the CIA voice to be heard in the exam committees. Okay, next slide. All right. I don't know how far... Sorry. Next slide after that. Thank you. All right, just a show of hands. How many people are still studying to be ASA? Okay, I'll go a little faster on this one then. We've adopted some changes, implementing some learning strategies and new technologies and methods. Some of you are just who are already ASAs or FSAs may not know this, but the exams these days also include case studies, cooperating in teams, and doing a physical report in person to examiners, which is a little bit more real life than study for exams. So these are new learning techniques that are being used on this ASA pathway. What about the components of what people study the ASA? Next slide, please. Okay. There are now going to be 12 components. I hesitate to call them exams, but there are 12 components instead of 10. This includes a greater emphasis on predictive analytics and also a better balance between long-term and short-term insurance. The short-term insurance would be things like health insurance, property casualty, and some other international coverages. And the feeling was that there was a bit too much emphasis on long lifetime contingencies and not enough on the, especially in the international markets, on these shorter term coverages. So that's one of the changes. It does take a little longer to go through 12 components than through 10, but we double checked with employers and they said, look, it's really important that people learn predictive analytics. It's the way of the future. We don't care if it takes a little longer, and you really should do it. And we did. So starting July this year, for those of you still writing exams, this is it. Starting July this year, the new curriculum comes in, and you kind of get exemption from predictive analytics if you become ASA by July 1st. Otherwise, you go on to the new curriculum. And FSAs who haven't become FSAs, those who are studying the FSAs and have not become FSAs by July 1st, 2022, they'll have to show expertise in these new areas. Okay. Show of hands. How many are CRAs or studying to be CERAs? Nobody. Oh, one. I'll go very fast on this one. We've updated the curriculum for this too. Next slide. Okay. This one's new and you probably haven't heard about this one. Certified Actuarial Analyst. What is that? Never heard that before. Well, it's something that the British Institute, IFOA, the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries, has been operating for a number of years, producing what's called Certified Actuarial Analysts. And these are people that kind of like study ASA light exams. You cover the whole spectrum of the ASA exams, but not as much depth as a traditional actuarial student would do. And you could probably become a CAA in about 2 years There's about five or six modules, et cetera. So the IFOA approached us and said, hey, you guys, you know, you're in North America, we're in Europe a lot. Maybe we should do a joint venture together and try to promote this. And we thought about it. We said, yeah, that sounds interesting. Because a lot of us actuaries, we do work with people in IT or underwriting or whatever. And these support people could do a better job if they were, if they better understood what actual literature and actual work is all about. And so we entered a joint venture. If you become a CAA after 2 years of study, you have a choice. You could join the IFOA CAA track, or you can join the SOA joint venture. We want to make it very clear, and this was a concern. These are not actuaries. They're not members. They don't vote. It's a different category, but they are subject to, you know, they're professionals. They're going to be subject to a code of conduct, CPD requirements, and discipline. Next slide. Just a little bit more on CAA qualifications. It's an internationally recognized professional qualification for those who excel at technical and analytic work. And it's focused on actuarial support roles and broader financial services. It's designed to complement, not compete, with the traditional associateship and fellowship qualifications. Okay, I mentioned predictive analytics very briefly. I want to say a little bit more about that. This is something that we're really heavily involved in, as is the Casualty Actuarial Society and other actuarial organizations throughout the world. So last year we said, well, okay, we've got predictive analytics for our exams, for ASAs. What about fellows that want to learn more about this, you know, the in-force actuaries as opposed to the new business actuaries? We decided to run a pilot project. There were 100 applicants, all seasoned fellows with certain qualifications. And out of those, we could only accommodate 30, so we picked 30. And they spent 5 months with online learning and then a 3-day seminar in Chicago. And, so that was our predictive analytics certificate program. And it was so popular that we decided, instead of doing it once a year, we're going to run it 2 times this year in 2018. The other thing we did is we want to have a sense of community. So we had a 2017 inaugural, that's the first one, Predictive Analytics Symposium. And we didn't know how many people would show up, but we had about 170 people show up. And there were a mix of sessions, all the way from beginners to intermediate to those who are very advanced at predictive analytics. There was something for everyone. We also sponsor the Kaggle competition, which is, if you're in predictive analytics, this is where you want to be. This is where you want to compete. You know, if you win there, you're winning a Nobel Prize in predictive analytics. So the SOA is one of the sponsors and offers prizes to those who place in the top 10 to 25%. The last thing we did is for those who are not yet actuaries, but are on their way, we started an intern program to place actuaries in non-traditional roles. So we wanted to broaden the role of the actuary into other areas. One way to do so was it's kind of like an investment or planting seeds. We wanted employers who have not been traditional people that hire actuaries to see what an actuary can bring and what it could do for their organization. And some of the organizations really surprised me. Like, we placed people at NASA. You don't think of that as an actuarial organization. We placed people at Microsoft, some sports companies, and some health companies. And they were very impressed with the people that were presented. And, sorry, you're raising a hand?
Yeah. Are these fully qualified actuaries?
No, they're juniors. They're not ASAs yet.
Oh.
Right. And so in 2017, we placed 12 interns, both in traditional and non-traditional occupations. And the 2017 employers included Advocate Health, Horizon Pharma, I don't recognize these companies, Newstar, and Carpe Data, not Carpe Diem, Carpe Data. Anyway, that's just another thing that is taking place in that space. Next slide. The other thing we want to do is we want to stay ahead of the curve and make sure that we respond to changes in the environment. So we've formally adopted as a board, SOA board, an enhanced environment scanning program. What we do is we identify trends that are important to the SOA and the profession. We assess their impact, and we develop a structure to deal with them. In fact, all of you can participate. There's actually, if you go to the web, if you notice something that might be of significance, a threat or opportunity to the actual profession, you can actually submit a short paragraph, and we will take that into consideration and follow up. We have a disciplined process of triaging. So some things are kind of like, that's not important. That's not a worry. Some things are, wow, we really need to do something about this. So just to give you a flavor of what we've been looking at, the last two board meetings, we looked at long-term care, which could lead to a lot of insolvencies or significant insolvencies in the U.S. And hurt the reputation of actuaries in so doing. And the other thing we're looking at is InsurTech. What's that space all about? What does it mean for insurance companies? What does it mean for actuaries? What does it mean for the profession? And that type of thing. So that's it for now. So next slide. International strategy. Let's discuss international strategy. And I'll focus on Latin America and China primarily. Next slide. The one before that. Yes. Okay. As I mentioned, Latin America is not well established in terms of the actual profession. We do have an active Latin America committee looking into this. The team has met with insurance companies in Latin America, with universities, with regulators, and with employers. And at this stage, they're doing fact-finding and scouting the territory. There is a multi-year plan, and it kind of like grades up. You know, we start with awareness. You know, we want people to be aware of what actuaries are. Then we go to enhancing the reputation of actuaries, and finally creating and growing actuaries locally. So that's Latin America. Next slide. Asia. It may surprise you, but 5 of the top 10 exam centers these days are not even in North America. They're actually in Asia. So the biggest exam centers, the largest number of writers are actually in Asia. I didn't bring it with me. I could probably name them some other time. The point is the Society of Actuaries needs to tailor its services to meet the needs of a broadening membership. We want to make sure we're on the ground there locally. So we have, as we introduced her before, Jessie Lee is our person on the ground in Beijing. We also have someone in Hong Kong who couldn't be here. Yes. And I mentioned Ben. He's our guy on the ground in Canada. Right. Okay. So... Yeah, this is the next slide. Okay, so we have thousands of candidates writing in Asia, and we sponsor key events. One example of the key event is the annual China Symposium. It's kind of funny. This is only the second time it took place, but we plan to do this every year and sponsor it. I was there in June of last year. We had about 200 to 300 attendees, or maybe more. 300. Okay. This was about, personally for me, it was my fifth trip to Asia, my first one as the SOA president. I was asked to be the keynote speaker. I was on a panel, and I also spoke to the local press about issues of interest to them and to the profession. Some of our speakers, you'll see their picture up there. We had Song Chen Sheng. He's head of statistics at the People's Bank of China. And we had Jing Guo, who is vice head of finance and actuarial at CIRC, the China Insurance Regulatory Commission. I certainly enjoyed speaking and meeting with them, and also meeting with the members attending. And next slide. Yeah, so you can see it was quite active. You had audience participation, interviews with the press. Yeah, a funny thing about interviews with the press, I should tell you this. Yeah, the top picture there is kind of interesting. Press interviews are different in Asia compared to North America. The way they happen here is people from the press, they come, they ask you questions spontaneously. There's a scrum or whatever. In Asia, they're much more polite. They give you the questions in advance. So you get the questions in advance. You can write out your answer. You can bring notes. Then you sit down with the reporter. And then he asks you the question in Chinese. There's a translator that translates in English, which you know what the question is because they gave you the list. You read out your answer, and everyone goes, ah, oh, okay, good. And then you move on. So they did screw me up once or twice by changing the order of the questions or throwing it. But it was okay. Okay, so next slide. Yeah, here's, I made the front, not the front page, but a page. A page of a newspaper. This, four newspapers. This one was called the 21st Century Business Herald. I think Paul says a translation of this will be on the website for those of you who don't read Mandarin. But the kind of questions they asked were kind of interesting. They asked me about healthcare in China, about the low interest environment. It sounds very actuarial. About car insurance reform. What does car insurance reform mean in China? They want to price premiums for auto insurance based on risk. What a concept. Yes. I said it was a great idea. They asked me about the role of the actuaries. They asked me about the Belt and Road opportunities. Some of you have read about this in the Economist or elsewhere. There's the old Silk Road is now becoming a 21st century superhighway. They asked me about overseas expansion of insurance companies. You know, whether I thought buying hotels was a good alternative investment. No, it wasn't. This was in the context of ALM. I said no, I don't think so. They asked me about foreign companies entering China and what the future is for actuaries in China. So, as you know, if you caught me in the middle of nowhere asking me these questions on the street, I wouldn't give you as coherent an answer as you got over here when you have a lot of time to think about it and research. Okay, Nankai University. This is just outside of Tianjin, or near Tianjin. The story here is that back in 1987, the SOA Board of Governors passed a resolution for the SOA to help establish an actuarial science program at Nankai University in Tianjin, China. So this marked the beginning of growth for the SOA in China at a time when China was just beginning to emerge as a developed nation. So this is 30 years ago. So this visionary exchange of actuarial teachers from Canada and the U.S. helped to create one of China's most esteemed university programs. So this past year, we celebrated the 30th anniversary of the SOA relationship with Nankai University. I had the opportunity to visit Nankai University, and along with me were two other original teachers who taught there, Stuart Klugman, who some of you know, and Harry Panger, who many of you should know. I think he even spoke here. a few years ago. It was certainly gratifying to see how the seeds of collaboration that were first planted 30 years ago have blossomed to create a very vibrant and growing profession in the country. This picture is kind of interesting. These were all university professors or heads of department, and it was like all on one side, and we couldn't quite fill the other side. There were only five of us, so they kind of wrapped around us. I can't see as clearly from here, but I was there. You had Harry Panger. Anne, were you there too?
Yes,
Anne's there, if you look very closely. And so that was kind of interesting. And everybody's into like protocol and that type of thing. So I was in the middle, and the guy facing me, of course, had to be the top guy at the Nankai University. And I don't know if you can see him. He looks kind of old. And yeah, even by my standards, he's old. He started this university program, actuarial science, when he was 59, when many people think of retiring. So here he is, 30 years later, you know, meeting with us. You know, I'd like to be like that when I'm 89 or whatever, 30 years later. So he's very spry, was walking okay, no wheelchair, nothing. Was it just like a regular guy? I was impressed. Must be something in the water. Okay, the other funny story about this is that we were all supposed to speak, SOA, at the Nankai University event. It was a Monday, Tuesday kind of thing, and it was going to be guest speakers and panelists, whatever, with translation. And the order came from above. You must not have meetings with foreign speakers who haven't been served by me. It used to be you could have up to five foreign speakers at the event. This time they said, no, not even one. So they were very embarrassed. And so this actually happened Sunday night in one of the quiet faculty clubs of the university. So politics and actuarial profession kind of like are still sorting themselves out in China. And the guy who heads CERC, they don't have a guy who heads CERC. They're still looking for it. So it's like pretend Austi has no head. And it's been going on for about a year. So I think they're going to nominate somebody soon, but we haven't heard yet. Okay? And this is another picture on the steps of the university. Again, the same smiley individuals. Everybody's happy, etc. Anyway, next. I hope you enjoyed my my brief talk about the SOA and its initiatives and international expansion. And I look forward to continuing this dialogue and discussion with you during supper or maybe even now if you have questions.
All right, everyone. First of all, let's give a big hand of applause to Mike.